Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 1st of July 2016. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are John Regan.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Brine under fire for Brexit switch, work to resume on Barton Farm, and Casson Block revamp looks set to go ahead. So can we go over to John, please, for the first headline?
Yes, Brine under fire for Brexit switch. Winchester MP Steve Brine has come under fire from his own supporters after saying he will back legislation for Brexit. Mr. Brine will defy constituents who say he should follow the will of the people of Winchester, who voted by 60-40 to remain in the European Union at the referendum last Thursday. It was one of only three districts in Hampshire to vote to remain, along with East Hampshire and Hart. One Conservative voter, Sarah Vierson-Corser of Nuns Road Hyde, said, "My shock at the result of the referendum turned to anger when I saw the message from Steve Brine to members of the local Conservative Party saying he will vote Brexit in Parliament. The referendum is not legally binding. It is advisory. That means that MPs still have their own minds and the choice to remain true to their beliefs and convictions. The issue of whether or not to remain a member of the EU runs far deeper than party politics, and the arrangement of the referendum campaign reflected that point. So I'm angry that our MP, who was pro-Europe before June 24th, suddenly became anti-Europe on June the 25th, purely for party political reasons. I don't want our constituency to become subject to the Brexit Conservative Party. And even though I've written to Mr. Brine to express my bitter disappointment on his sudden decision, he's not answered my letter." Mr. Brine said, "Let's be clear. I'm a Democrat. Parliament voted by a huge margin to hold this referendum, and in doing so, gave the people the power to decide. So I will respect the will of the British people, even though it was different to my personal preference. And I don't believe that you keep asking the question until you get the answer you want." He added, "We're a peaceful, democratic nation, not an autocracy that ignores the electorate." Already, more than 50,000 Hampshire people, including around 10,000 in the Winchester area, have signed an online petition calling for a second referendum. As well as throwing national politics into turmoil with the resignation of the Prime Minister David Cameron and the ructions in the Labour Party, it has derailed clarity over possible reorganisation of local government in Hampshire. City Council leader Stephen Godfrey, a Conservative Brexiteer, said, "It was a surprise. Now we have to make sure we do not go to the extremes of this campaign, some of which were unpleasant and ridiculous in equal measure. And this uncertainty will not help local businesses." Meanwhile, the local Lib Dems said they were seeing a membership boost in the last week. Councillor Martin Todd said 40 people had joined locally and 8,000 nationally. He said, "People are joining us because of the strong line that we took on the Euro referendum and our hard work locally and nationally campaigning for the country to remain a member of the EU. The chaos since the vote shows that we were right to campaign as we did." Lib Dem leader Lucille Thompson said, "We were surprised at the result. We felt we'd won the day, but we woke up to find we hadn't. This will have a devastating effect on jobs and the economy."
Work to resume on Barton Farm. Winchester's largest development in 40 years is back on track after a year of no progress. Building work started last year, but was hampered by an ongoing dispute between the developer, Carla Holmes, and the landowner, Winchester College, over the value of the land. The college was asking a higher price than Carla was willing to pay for the first chunk of land that would provide 223 homes, revealed by the Chronicle last August. An independent tribunal was called in to settle the issue, and agreement has been reached. City Council leader Stephen Godfrey said work on the 2,000 home scheme is set to resume on Monday, July the 4th. Councillor Godfrey and City Council planners are breathing a big sigh of relief, as the longer the scheme for 2,000 homes was delayed, the greater the chances of developers being able to persuade planning inspectors that their speculative schemes should proceed. Developers would be able to say that the council is failing to hit its targets. Linden Homes is arguing that Linden Homes is arguing that over its plans for 350 homes at Pitt Vale, Councillor Godfrey said, "I have been assured by both parties that the process has been completed. It's very good news. We were running out of time," referring to the supply of new houses that would enable the council to rebuff speculative development. "There was quite a lot of headroom, but it was coming down. The room for flexibility in the five-year supply of houses wasn't being helped by the delays. We have more than enough new homes in the next few months without Barton Farm. But in 12 months, that might not have been the case." Robin Shute, estates bursar, confirmed a confidential agreement had been reached via a tribunal of experts. Mr. Shute said the agreement only related to this tranche of land, not other parts of the site. Nick Twine, managing director of Carla Holmes Thames, said, "An agreement has now been reached between Carla Holmes and Winchester College on the purchase of the King's Barton site. Work will start in early July, and we are delighted to now be moving forward with this aspirational new suburb of the city. King's Barton forms a new northern edge of Winchester, with 2,000 homes around a vibrant centre of shops, leisure and community facilities, a new school and public open space. The new site will connect neighbouring communities and create an impressive new gateway to the city. King's Barton is a flagship development for Carla, and we are incredibly excited to see our vision take shape. The centre will include shops, a 60-bed care home, a pub or restaurant, a nursery and a community centre. Children are expected to join a new 420-place academy or use new infrastructure links to attend Henry Beaufort School in Hairstock." And there is a picture of the site as it is now.
With poppies. It's got poppies. The picture may not have poppies.
It does have poppies.
Yes.
Casson Block revamp looks set to go ahead. Winchester Civic Chiefs are set to press ahead with the revamp of Casson Block despite last-minute objections. The City Council wants to spend £150,000 to make the cobbled area outside the 1960s block fit for tables and chairs. But opposition councillors have raised objections, saying the seating would be next to the heavy city centre traffic of St George's Street. Liberal Democrats councillors Dominic Hiscock, Martin Todd, Eleanor Bell and Liz Hutchinson, and group leader Lucille Thompson all sent objections before the decision notice set to be signed by Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for estates and local economy. They're concerned that even with the protection from shrubs planters, the diners could be hit by high levels of pollution. But Shah Abdul, who has recently opened Manau Thai, is in favour. If it makes the Castle Block a more attractive place, I'm all for it. It'd be good if I could double the floor area, but it is weather-dependent. Councillor Ian Tate said, I wholeheartedly support the proposals. I've been pushing hard for officers to make for many years to come up with a scheme to improve this somewhat neglected area. Whilst I'm sensitive to the issues of the air quality in the area, is already well used by customers sitting out and the various outside the various eateries, so I question why some people think the plan should be shelved. And there's a picture of the area in St George's Street showing where all these places are.
Now, as you can imagine, the Chronicle is full of articles and comments about the EU referendum. There are so many that I thought we would take a few of them, all the main articles of them now and get them over with. So we'll go to John, please, for the first article.
Yes, I'll kick off. This one's titled Residents and Firms React to Brexit Vote. So it's been decided. The United Kingdom has voted out of the European Union. Despite the result in one of the most important votes in the country's history, residents of Winchester were not in a celebratory mood. The city voted to stay in the Union by almost 13,000 voters, but this view was not shared by the rest of the country. The national turnout was 72.2%, that's over 33.5 million people. Winchester resident and Inn supporter Charlotte Butler told the Chronicle that she's scared what the future could hold for her children. She said, I'm worried about what could be in store for us. My main worry is that it's going to affect my children and their children rather than me. However, one Hampshire business leader says Brexit might be good news for small companies concerned with over-regulation from Brussels, but growth will be affected in several key areas of the region's economy. But Stuart Dunn, Hampshire Chamber Chief Executive, said that engineering, aerospace and marine sectors, all big employers in the county, now faced uncertainty. He added, some of our members who've long harboured legitimate concerns about Brussels' power and red tape will be happy. Among them will be owners of many small and medium-sized businesses. We understand the frustrations they've had, and we hope the future is more benign. For those who voted to remain, however, including no doubt those many Hampshire exporters who trade across the EU and have been putting off investment decisions, the referendum result will be a powerful blow. Hampshire has very strong links to Europe through its geographic proximity, two major seaports, and regional airport. Growth strategies will be affected. But what the business community needs now is a clear plan to stabilise markets, and equally, the government needs to ensure there are free trade deals in place with Europe and elsewhere that really do deliver. And there's a picture of some Inn campaigners standing by the statue of King Alfred in the Broadway there, looking quite cheerful and happy, but I'm assuming that's before the vote.
Mm. Now, from a farming point of view, farming uncertainty in wake of Brexit vote. There will be a long period of uncertainty for Hampshire farmers in the wake of the EU referendum. Growers and producers are beginning to work out how the county's farming industry will work outside the European Union, the world's largest agricultural trader. The National Farmers Union, NFU, has called an emergency meeting with its governing body for Friday as it prepares to work with the government to negotiate ways to ensure farming does not suffer as a result of Britain's exit from the EU. A new British agricultural policy will be drawn up to ensure standards of both imported and exported produce do not lower, there are enough farm workers to work the land, and to ensure UK farmers are still able to trade with the EU. Hampshire farmers, who bring £132 million a year into the British economy, are now eagerly waiting the results of those discussions. Rheims English Sparkling, based in Cheriton, employs Romanian workers at its vineyard, and owner Augusta Rames said, "I have no idea how it's going to affect us. I'm just waiting to see what happens. We employ people in the EU, and I am certainly hoping that we keep the single market and the free movement of labour, as we get very good help from Romanian people who work for us. It is a shock, and I am just really hoping we can follow the Swiss model." The Hampshire branch of the NFU has warned that there could be months of uncertainty, and there is not going to be a quick solution. Sandra Nichols, NFU County Advisor for Hampshire and Surrey, said, "Our initial thoughts are that it's going to lead to a period of uncertainty for farmers in Hampshire." The NFU's view was that, in terms of the agricultural industry, the UK would be better off with the EU. But people have had their say, and now we need to move forward. The NFU's next job is to engage fully, first of all, with our members, to find out what a new UK agricultural policy will look like, and then we will need to engage with the British government to try to create new arrangements for our farming industry. There's no tremendous rush to this. We need to take our time. Agriculture is a fundamental industry for our country. We need to achieve the best possible access to European markets because they are our main trading partner. We will also need to ensure that we have access to markets in the rest of the world, but at the same time, ensure that we are protected from any imports that are produced to a lower standard, because we have very high standards here. And there's a lovely picture of a farmer on a tractor. It might be one of the Romanian workers, actually, gathering in some produce. And the weather actually looks sunny.
Oh, that must have been a short window.
50,000 call for second vote. More than 50,000 Hampshire residents have signed an online petition calling for a second referendum on Britain's membership of the European Union. In the Winchester voting area, more than 10,000 people have signed the petition, which has more than 3.6 million signatures overall. They spoke out as it emerged that Germany had asked Britain to think again over its decision to quit the EU. In a further twist, Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon warned that the Edinburgh Parliament could block the UK's withdrawal by using devolved powers. Nationally, more than 3 million people have signed the petition calling for another vote. The petition, launched by William Oliver Healy, who is in fact a Brexit supporter who made the petition in the event of a Brexit defeat, says, "We, the undersigned, call upon HM government to implement a rule that if the Remain or Leave vote is less than 60%, based on a turnout of less than 75%, there should be another referendum. Last week, Britain voted by 52% to 48% to leave the EU. However, it was also revealed the House of Commons Petitions Committee is investigating allegations of fraud, and 77,000 names have been removed from the petition. Hampshire MPs have rejected calls for a second referendum. Steve Bryan, Conservative MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, said, "You can't keep asking the same question until you get the answer you want. We now need to make it work for the sake of the country, and we will." Similar views were voiced by Royston Smith, Tory MP for Southampton Itchen, who voted to leave the EU. Mims Davies, Tory MP for Eastleigh, added, "The time for campaigning on this issue was before 10 p.m. on June the 23rd.
Yes, and here's news of a very unfortunate repercussion from the Brexit vote. This piece is headed "Call for Calm After Rise in Racial Abuse Reports." Community leaders and MPs across Hampshire have appealed for calm and tolerance after reports of racist abuse in the wake of the Brexit result. Up to a dozen residents from the Asian and Polish communities in Southampton have reported being abused in the past few days. And elsewhere in Hampshire, BBC journalist Seema Kotecha says she was verbally abused in her hometown of Basingstoke. Police are investigating an attack in Salisbury on a Polish woman who suffered face injuries after she was set upon by at least two men in an alleyway in an assault that may be linked to her nationality. Senior politicians from both the Leave and Remain camps have united to condemn the abuse and have urged the police to take tough action to tackle it. Hampshire Constabulary say it has not recorded a spike in hate crime in the past few days, but encouraged any victims to contact the force without delay. Meanwhile, Southampton's community chief, Councillor Satvia Kaur, said she'd received reports of abuse aimed at members of ethnic minority communities in Southampton since Thursday's referendum, in which the UK voted to leave the EU. She said an Asian businessman was approached in the Shell petrol station on Thomas Lewis Way by a man who shouted, "Haven't you heard we voted leave? Now get out of our country." She added that a Polish nurse was walking on Shirley Road when a man told her, "It's time you packed your bags." The National Police Chiefs Council has reported a 57% rise in reports of hate crime. And Councillor Kaur said, "I am horrified if this is now post-Brexit Southampton, because it definitely doesn't represent the city I was born and grew up in. Southampton is a very diverse city and is built on its immigrant history, and we have communities that enrich our city day by day. Any incidents, however small or big, people need to look out for them. Call them out for what they are and report them to the police." Council leader, Councillor Simon Letts, echoed her sentiments, saying it's time we remained calm. Conservative Southampton Itchen MP Royston Smith, a Leave campaigner, said, "Firstly, people that come to settle in this country are welcomed by most of us. They enrich our country and culture, and they work hard. For those ignorant people that think that leaving the EU gives them some right to make a pejorative comment to people who have come to settle here, well, there's no excuse for that. And I hope that if this has happened, the police come down on them like a ton of bricks and nip it in the bud."
And on a similar theme, religious leaders are calling for unity. Religious leaders have called for unity following the outcome of the referendum. Prior to the historic vote, religious leaders from the UK's faith communities opposed Brexit and argued the EU is important to preserve peace, fight poverty, and tackle the migration crisis. They included the likes of former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, Barty Taylor, who is Executive Director of the Hindu Forum of Europe, and Assistant General Secretary of the Muslim Council of Great Britain, Miqdad Versi. In Hampshire, Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, has called for calm from both sides. He said, "I hope that we can come together by focusing on what unites rather than divides us." Secretary of Southampton Hebrew Congregation, Professor Tim Slukin, said he was disappointed by the outcome, but called for unity. He said, "I think it is important that the country unites. A united country is good for social cohesion and good for the Jews. Nonetheless, I am disappointed with the outcome."
Ferocious attack on Alsford. An Alsford-raised academic has launched a ferocious attack on the mentality of his hometown in the pages of the most famous newspaper in the world, the New York Times. Tom Wyman, 27, lambasted the market town over the decision of the UK to vote in favour of Brexit. In a piece headlined, "Hell is Other Britons," Mr. Wyman wrote, "Alsford is my personal hell. Dig below the surface and you'll find the demons crawling. You can see them in the looks that residents give you when they pass. Sneering snobs glaring down their noses with entitlement. Small-minded townies bullying you with eyes that you recognise from the primary school lunchroom. The old people, 80 and above, wearing blank stares. Brexit is the result of deep nihilism among the British public. This nihilism has not just emerged recently. This is the nihilism of Allsfordism, a security-driven retraction towards death. His comment has stunned and upset many residents. John Miller, who lives in nearby Bishop Sutton, said, "I could hardly believe my eyes when a friend in New York sent me this article. What a pity Mr. Wyman didn't attend the recent Allsford Literary Festival, where the audience was abuzz, talking to all their neighbours about the brilliant presentations by Robert Hardy, John Julius Norwich and Edna O'Brien. Allsford is the friendliest place I've ever lived in, though after his bilious article, Mr. Wyman might not find it so in his next visit." Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who represents the town on the City Council, added, "I don't know the author, but he's clearly had a bad day. His assessment of Allsford couldn't be more wrong, as my own experience is that it is full of intelligent, kind and worldly people." People voted in the referendum for many different reasons and personal reasons, and to portray Allsford residents as some one unthinking, uncared mass reveals only the small-mindedness and perhaps the immaturity of the author. I could say more, but the most important thing for us all now is to try to dissipate the bitterness and anger that's divided friends and family, and to make the very best of the circumstances we now find ourselves in. Speaking to the Chronicle, Dr. Wyman, who attended King's School and Peter Simmons College, said, "I woke up at 6 a.m. on Friday incredibly frustrated and angry. It's shared by a lot of young people in Allsford. I'm articulating an anger I grew up here and remain trapped here in some way." Mr. Wyman said he wrote the piece before hearing the Winchester district, which includes Allsford, had bucked the trend to vote by 60-40 to stay on in the EU. Mr. Wyman's father is Tony Wyman, who runs the Childhood's Dream toy shop in the Brook Centre. Mr. Wyman said, "We've always encouraged our children to think outside the box and to not be afraid of putting themselves forward. This article is about the circumstances a town like Allsford finds itself in and the consequences for its young people." John Cranfield of Nursery Road said, "To me, the town is a friendly place. Based on my own experience, people know each other and welcome new visitors to the town. It's a shame he failed to do this in his research in relation to the Brexit vote, though." And
now we have the death notices. Bull. Jim Bull, in Flower Down Nursing Home, aged 92. Daniels. Raymond Ray Daniels, a retired local businessman and well-known bowls player. Freeman, Robin Freeman, who read for the Winchester Talking News and is a good friend of several of us, and it's very sad to see his name. He died peacefully at St. Catherine's View Nursing Home, aged 74. Hayes, Brian Hayes, suddenly, aged 87. Knight, John Knight, at home, aged 91. May, Susan May, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Macaulay, Joan Macaulay, at her home in Chandler's Ford, aged 95. Perkis, Kathleen Perkis, peacefully in Hawthorne Court, Sarasbury Green. Tennant, David Sidney Tennant, peacefully, aged 78. And finally, Wood, Mary Wood, at Bishop's Waltham House. And now, please, could we have Christian comment?
Of course. And Christian comment this week is written by Rosemary A. Baker and is titled "A Question of Conscience Amid War." Today, July the 1st, our country will be commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Battle of the Somme at the beginning of the First World War. A few days later, on Sunday, July the 3rd, we will be commemorating Battle of Britain Memorial Day from the Second World War. I have often had a problem with what my view should be on war as a Christian. I come from a strong military background on my father's side and was brought up as an army child. My mother's family, on the other hand, from where I get my Methodist roots, were the exact opposite. Indeed, my maternal grandfather was a conscientious objector, albeit serving as a stretcher bearer and being awarded a French medal for bravery. I was very interested, therefore, to discover that to celebrate a centenary of conscientious objection at Anglesey Brook Chapel and Museum of Primitive Methodism, Britain's involvement in the First World War continues to be commemorated with an exhibition focusing on Conscientious Objection, Blood and Guts, A Community at War by Professor Michael Hughes. In August 1914, the Primitive Methodist leader thundered, "A wave of madness has swept over Europe, and Britain is invited to plunge into a fury that is insane." A week later, in an astonishing U-turn, Primitive Methodist President Arthur Guthrie called for young men to enlist. Many responded to the call, believing, as did Wesleyan President Dinsdale Young, that love of country is part of the love of God. But others, also for conscience' sake, chose a path that led to rejection, persecution, and in extreme cases, death. There were 16,000 conscientious objectors, COs, during the First World War. Many were Quakers, but they also included Plymouth Brethren and Christadelphians, whose churches all took an anti-war stand. For Methodists and other nonconformists, it was much more difficult because of the mixed messages given by their church. Methodism had taken a peaceful stance throughout the 19th century, but now Christians who felt it was contrary to the gospel to take up arms were called cowards and shirkers. It was not a decision made lightly. While not doubting the courage of those who enlisted, one young man believed those who refused to kill are heroes just as great. Another admitted that at heart he was a conscientious objector, but was too much of a coward to face its consequences. So as we remember the sacrifice and suffering of war, it is worth taking a few moments to remember those who refuse to bear arms. For in our troubled world, there should also be time and a role for those who propose the way of peace.
Letters to the editor, I think, take us back to the referendum for a large part of it. But anyway, we shall see. So we'll go, please, to John for the first letter.
And yes, Vara, you're absolutely right. The first one flows from the EU referendum result. It's titled New Constitution, and it comes from Jeff Naylor, who lives in Colden Common. Sir, the EU referendum campaign and result has revealed a huge, almost unbridgeable gulf between the concerns of the majority in this country and the MPs who are supposed to represent those views in Parliament. This is a crisis of representative democracy that can be wholly attributed to the failure of our unwritten constitution and electoral systems. We need a new constitutional settlement for the people of the UK, but it needs to be drawn up not by the UK government and its civil servants in London, but by representatives who are closer to the people. That's to say, our local authority councillors. So, I propose a councillors' UK constitutional convention comprised of two representatives from each UK district, county, metropolitan county and borough, London borough and unitary council to meet, elect an executive and subsequently agree a written UK constitution including electoral reform. This finalised constitution should then be ratified by the Parliament of the UK, Scottish Parliament, the National Assembly of Wales, Northern Ireland Assembly and London Assembly, and put to the people for their consent in a referendum.
And this letter comes from Alan Fowler. Sir, are the people in Hampshire who voted Leave in the referendum happy that Brexit has now been welcomed by Donald Trump, Marie Le Pen's National Front, other far-right groups across Europe, including the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn, the Iranian General Massoud Jazayeri, and many Putinesque Russian politicians? It may be some small consolation that 59% in Winchester voted to remain, as did a very much larger majority of young voters across the UK. But that's cold comfort for the generation of young people whose future as internationally minded Europeans is now in jeopardy. And I say that as a Remain voter, in my 80s, Alan Fowler, Clifton Road, Winchester.
Love Neighbours, a letter from Edward Bruce Ellis. Sir, after weeks of being annoyed by lies, damned lies and statistics and appeals to our fears, greed and selfishness from both Remain and Leave, it was a blessed relief to read the Reverend Graham Bowcutt's Christian comment in last week's Chronicle. At the Last Supper, Christ gave us a new commandment, that we should love one another. Reverend Bowcutt's gift of his time, advice, kind words, care and prayer brought comfort to a couple in great distress. Whether in or out of the EU, let us show the respect and loving kindness to our neighbours on both sides of the Channel and to strangers at our gates. And that's from Edward Bruce Ellis of Harrow Down, Badger Farm.
Future unclear. Sir, Winchester voted to remain in the European Union. Sadly, the majority of the UK did not. Those of us who worked hard to achieve the local result must feel particular sympathy for all those young people who enthusiastically supported our campaigns and now have to live with the result which they did not choose. It was a great boost for those of us hardened campaigners to be joined on referendum day by so many young people, including teams of 17-year-olds from Peter Simmons, who'd been denied a vote by the Tory government, but whose future prospects may now be in jeopardy through the economic uncertainty facing our country. We can only hope that the young generation who care deeply about the future of this country now take part in political activity to try and make the best of the situation we now find ourselves in. We must work together to promote respect and understanding, despite the foul abuse that a few in our society felt justified in shouting at those campaigning here in Winchester last Thursday. The weeks, months and years ahead will be difficult, and the future seems a lot less certain than it did a week ago. But we must hope that some positives can come from the campaign locally. And that letter comes from Patrick Davis, who lives in Staple Gardens in Winchester.
And on the same theme, sir, this referendum result is damaging not only for the nation, which is now deeply divided, but an injustice for the future of our young people. Is it right that the post-war generation who have enjoyed the rewards of the European Union peace dividend and economic rewards of EU membership should deny those same benefits to our young people? Damages need repairing, injustices rectifying. It is my hope and wish that the Labour Party will seize this window of opportunity that the next 6 months gives. It is not to the Labour Party of Jeremy Corbyn, whose lack of belief in the European cause was clear to see, that I look to, but to a Labour Party ready and willing to replace him, and so stand up to a divided and divisive Conservative Party, which has failed the nation by putting party above the national interest. I suggest, under a new leader, and with the support of the Liberal Democrats and Greens, that Labour enter into an electoral pact to unite in putting the future of our nation's young people first, and by calling on the new Prime Minister to hold a general election before Article 50 of the European Union is enacted. The Left Alliance should fight the general election on a mandate to reverse the Tory referendum disaster and keep Britain within the EU. It will allow those voters who have regrets an opportunity to fully reconsider their actions and vote accordingly. I see this as the only way a dreadful decision can be rectified and the nation's future assured. Mike Moore, Park Road, Winchester.
Now a rather different type of letter, entitled 100 Years of Strife. Sir, once upon a time in the ancient Roman Republic, the growing wealth and power of Rome became increasingly concentrated in 1% of the population. But there were rivalries in that small group, and some seeing much discontent amongst those who had ever decreasing share of all this wealth, power and knowledge, thought to themselves, aha, here's our chance to go one up. And so they promised the discontented people a sense of belonging and wealth and security, and they formed factions in the name of liberty. The others, who considered themselves the best, fearing for their own preeminence, resisted these populists. The result was 100 years of strife that tore the boss people apart. In the end, however, everyone from top to bottom lost their liberty and were forced to kiss the hands of autocrats, which usually happens with autocrats, degenerated into monsters like Caligula and Nero. And that, dear sir, is mostly true. And that's from Jock MacDonald of Stockbridge Road, Winchester.
And in a startling departure from Brexit and its repercussions, this is entitled Farewell to Our Valued Customers. Sir, as you reported in your newspaper on June the 16th, Woodruffs of Winchester are about to close after 24 years of trading. Well, this has now occurred to a customer lament of loss, sadness and grief. This was accompanied by an overwhelming amount of praise, best wishes, good luck and other expressions of goodwill for our future. Thank you, Winchester, for having us. And thank you for your generosity of spirit and for those heartfelt comments. To all our now erstwhile customers, thank you for your custom. And we'll cherish those good wishes as we start our new venture in Wales. And that very heartfelt letter comes from Harry and Sandy Warwood from Woodruffs of Winchester in the Square in Winchester.
And this letter comes from Robert Hutchinson. Sir, both the brief for the development of Winchester station area and the process itself, unnecessarily costly and secretive, are deeply flawed. Most people would welcome some development on the cattle market and Carfax sites, but what is currently planned is wretchedly misguided. In 2014, I chaired a public meeting at Westgate School about Winchester's local plan. About 120 people were present, and at least two-thirds indicated that they wanted the registry office building next to the station retained. Views subsequently reinforced at the so-called consultation meetings. We should be reusing significant buildings, not knocking them down. It is also important to keep the green character of the Carfax site. Those of us who are bimbies, who want beauty in my backyard, are sickened by the prospect of more undistinguished overdevelopment for short-term commercial reasons. Last December, I attended the Paris negotiations on climate change, at which 195 countries committed themselves to creating a net zero carbon world by the second half of the century. To achieve this, and as a matter of urgency, cities and towns need to develop low carbon buildings, energy and transport systems, not lock ourselves into developments that will be heavily fossil fuel dependent for decades to come. The station area should be further developed as the centre of a transport system based on public transport, walking and cycling. The local authority should not be planning to bring more cars into that area and thereby worsening congestion and air pollution. They should be thoroughly analysing current traffic movements and working out how best to reduce car movements throughout the city. There are cheaper ways of growing mushrooms than by investing millions of pounds in soon-to-be-redundant underground parking spaces. Essential parking needs near the station could be met more simply and cheaply by putting an extra deck on the existing station car parks, with a negotiated revenue split between the City Council and South West Trains / Network Rail. Robin Hutchinson, Clifton Road, Winchester.
The next letter is far gone jargon. Sir, whilst admiring Geoffrey Bernand's A Blue Sky Thinking, at close of play we shall need to drill down a little deeper and write up the flagpole to see if we can find a paradigm shift. Letters of June the 23rd. Also, we should touch base and seek a thought shower that could open a door in order to look under the bonnet, pick the low-hanging fruit from the long grass in order to incentivise our 360-degree thinking on this one. My door is always open to the strategic staircase, but I wrouldn't want to wrongside the demographic or lose him from my radar. As I approach the crepuscule of my career, my expectations on most issues are slender, and so I must away and leverage the drinkables, i.e. make the coffee, before I'm sunsetted. Perhaps one of your readers could give me a heads up on this one. Peter Raw, Hurdleway, Compton Down.
Jargon. It was all jargon.
Oh, it was, wasn't it?
Yes. Right. Having finished the letters to the editor, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, emailing news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8. A-L. From the files brings us the historical news, and we'll start with 200 years ago. John.
Yes, here's news of a boating tragedy. Sunday evening, about 8 o'clock, a boat with 6 men and 4 women of genteel appearance approached London Bridge on its way down the river from an excursion on a party of pleasure. The tide was going down rapidly, and a waterman in a sculler, perceiving their intention to go through the bridge, went alongside and apprised them of the danger of such an attempt in the state of the river. The women were alarmed and were put ashore above the bridge, after which the 6 men in the boat rowed back and made an effort to shoot through the middle arch, when, unfortunately, the boat went down head foremost, and 4 of the party were drowned. The other 2 stuck to the boat, which came up immediately, and with assistance from the shore, were saved. And the next piece is headed Electric Treatments, and it's a notice from the Southampton Electrical and Galvanic Institute. And it reads, "The public are respectfully informed that this institution will be opened on Tuesday, the 2nd of July, at number 8 above the bar, regularly from 11 o'clock until 5, under the auspices of the physicians and surgeons of this town, for the medical application of electricity and galvanism by powerful machines and apparatus. The old mode of giving violent shocks will be disused, and a new and better system adopted, which will render the action of the electric fluid both mild and pleasurable," it says.
And there are 2 items from 100 years ago, July the 1st, 1916. New theatre plans. A special meeting of Winchester Town Council was held at the Guildhall on Tuesday morning to consider and, if approved, to authorise granting of a lease of the Corn Exchange buildings for the purpose of a theatre. Alderman Dyer, chairman of the Market Committee, said the committee were anxious to know what were the feeling of the council on the matter of making use of the large building which was lying idle. The Market Committee unanimously recommended the approval of the council. In the agreement, the committee laid down that sufficient space must be left for the market purposes. And the second item is titled French Advance. Good news comes from Verdun. The French have regained the Thomond work ground, which such bitter fighting has been waged in the past week. The work was carried at 10 o'clock in the morning, and after several determined counter-attacks, the Germans succeeded in re-entering the work at 3 in the afternoon, but soon lost it again. French trenches at Avocourt and Hill 304 were attacked during Thursday night. To the east of Hill 304, a small fortified work was buried by the bombardment and lost. But in the early morning, a brilliant counterattack by French troops made them again masters of the work.
And now, 50 years ago, July 2nd, 1966, barrier battle. A proposal by British Rail to erect an automatic half-barrier level crossing in place of the present full barrier at St Cross that met strong opposition from Winchester City Council on Wednesday evening. Councillor Mrs Carol Barron stated that the crossing was a favourite place for children and young spotters to gather, adding, the risks are colossal. I don't want it on my conscience. Councillor Stuart Green, chairman of the Highways Committee, explained that the barriers would normally be open, but on the approach of a train, a warning light and bell would sound, giving it 18 to 22 seconds for cars or pedestrians to clear the line. And the second item is new Winchester map. Winchester's long-awaited town centre map came before the City Council on Wednesday evening, but after receiving the report and clearing up a few doubtful points, members deferred full discussion of the map and the amendments to the traffic plan until the October meeting. Individual members had only received the report the day before, and it was generally felt that they were in no position to debate detailed points.
25 years ago, June the 28th, 1991. New coach park. A coach park in Chesil Street? The whole thing is just plain ridiculous. At least that's what residents were saying on Wednesday evening when they gathered in force to register their protest. Winchester City Council proposes to transfer the coach park from Worthy Lane to the Chesil Street car park at a cost of £200,000. But the residents put forward a strong case against to City Engineer David Marklew, Chairman of Health and Works Committee Jock MacDonald, Principal Engineer Colin Lillicrap and Mr David Croker. Mr Marklew said the Chesil area of Winchester was a good site, providing motorists with a place to park and close access to the town. And the second part, sacrificial lambs. Two villages in the Winchester district feel they've been made sacrificial lambs in the final version of the county strategic plan. Members of the Winchester District Association of Parish Councils were concerned at the broad brush green belt treatment in the final version, instead of the stronger protection of strategic gaps between settlements. Norman Clay, Swanmore, said Winchester City Council was not alone in feeling a proper solution to the strategic gap question and housing allocation has not been reached in the county plan. Otterbourne considered that they and Colden Common were sacrificial lambs in the way that green belt protection had been drawn up. We go now to editorial comment, and after that, first person, and Steve Brown's letter from Westminster. So over, please, to the editorial comment.
Yes, and the editor, I think, offers some measured and thoughtful responses to the Brexit vote in his piece headed MPs should respect decision to leave EU. So, the country has spoken, and most people in Winchester are saddened, bemused and appalled by what they hear. By a clear majority, people in the Winchester district voted to stay in the European Union. Let's set aside for a moment that this was a wholly unnecessary referendum set in train by a PM looking to solve political problems from his backbenchers and the threat from UKIP. The Remainers must accept the decision, even if history will show it will have been a mistake. They should reject the idea of a second referendum and the legalistic but daft notion of Parliament voting down the clear result. MPs represent the people. While MPs are not delegates as such, they are paid to exercise their judgment. But it would still be wrong for them to sidestep the referendum. So, Steve Bryan is right to say that he must accept the will of the people nationally. It's vital now that the pro-EU camp and Brexiteers work hard to heal the rift that has set the young against the old, north against south, city against country, graduates against non-graduates, the right against the left. This newspaper has raised the issue of the growing anger in politics, the corrosive erosion of trust in the process itself. And it's crucial now that the hotheads on both sides do not take control.
And First Person this week is written by Khalid Aziz. Brexit, a time for cool heads. What now? The people have spoken, the bastards. That famous phrase attributed to American Democratic strategist Dick Tuck was no doubt echoing around numbers 10 and 11 Downing Street last Friday morning. But the people have voted, and although most, including the markets and bookies, thought it would go the other way, the die is cast to leave. So what now? The day after Brexit, there were still people fighting yesterday's battle. Whilst David Cameron gave a statesman-like resignation speech, Business Minister Anna Soubry insisted on opining that it was the worst day of her life when she, along with the cooler heads, such as Bank of England Governor Mark Carney, should have been doing her damnedest to settle things down. In the run-up to the vote, I was telling anyone who would listen that whatever the outcome, we should all pull together, because either way, there was much at stake. Arguably, with Brexit, because it is an unknown country, we need to do that in spades. It also means there should be more cooperation than ever before. The European Union boil has been festering for decades. It needed to be lanced. It has been, and that means living with the will of the people. What's interesting is that those people in powerful positions who had been urging the British people to vote Remain prior to 23rd of June, the following day moved quickly to calm things down. Barack Obama announced within hours that the United Kingdom and the EU would remain strong allies of the United States. Even Christine Lagarde of the International Monetary Fund urged a smooth transition to the new relationship. EU apparatchiks too, the sensible ones at least, were keen to suggest positive engagement. So it would be absolutely tragic if, after the referendum decision, albeit a narrow one, we Brits start to tear ourselves apart. Britain is a resilient nation. The British are inventive and innovative. We will need to be fleet of foot in our negotiations. Apparently, we have too few negotiators within the existing civil service, so it would be a good idea to involve the best brains from the business world. The real lesson of all this is that we can be divided, sliced and diced in so many ways. Hampshire had a larger majority for Leave, Scotland for Remain. Ms Sturgeon sees this as an open goal for another tilt at independence, but she should be careful of what she wishes for. Had Scotland voted for independence in their referendum, they would now be in the cart, courtesy of a rock-bottom oil price. If there is to be a second independence referendum, then arguably the whole of Britain should vote. Miss Sturgeon might be surprised at the support for her endeavour from English voters. Apparently, the young wanted to remain. The old wanted to leave. Within families, husbands voted one way, wives the other. But this is healthy. The Brexit referendum reignited interest in democracy that had been steadily waning since my youth, when we were all up for going on a demo. It was one of the ways we made our own entertainment. But until the run-up to last Thursday, we had forgotten about democracy, and then we had a record 72% turnout. However, with this newfound interest in having a say over our future, we will need to recognise another element of the democratic process. Once all is said and done and the votes are cast, the rules of democracy dictate that we accept the will of the majority. This will be hard for some, those who think that shouting the loudest will win the day. The rest of us, those who used to be called the silent majority, must ensure we still such shrill voices and calm analysis and considered support for those who now have to steer us through some tricky waters. With democratic rights come real responsibilities. Let's unite and embrace this brave new world.
And now a letter from MP for Winchester, Steve Bryan. Harold Wilson famously said, a week is a long time in politics, and I can't remember a time when that was more true than it is today. In the past fortnight, we've seen the horror of a Member of Parliament murdered while doing our job, and the response from my constituents has been extraordinary. Thank you. I can't say I knew Joe Cox well, but we'd worked together a few times via my role at the Department of Health, and she seemed lovely. I realise that the public perception is that we MPs live in a separate world divided by party loyalties, but the reality couldn't be more different. The truth is, as I remember her, Jo herself saying in her maiden speech last year, there's so much more that unites us than divides us. I wonder whether the spirit of engagement with and understanding of the reality of hard-working constituents MP will last. And I suppose that spirit of unity over division leads neatly to the other political earthquake June 16th has brought, the result of the historic EU referendum. I don't intend to rerun the campaign here, except to say, for all the hype and the warnings, one way or the other, I think we overcomplicated it somewhat. Last week, I asked my little Emily, aged eight, whether she thought we should stay or leave. I think we should stay, Daddy, she said, because that's like being friends working together in teams, and because little arguments turn into big arguments if you're not friends. She'll go far. Obviously, events since last Friday morning have turned a week of politics into an age, and while Winchester District may have voted Remain by a clear majority, the country did not and has chosen a different path as a result. Constituents have contacted me since in sheer delight at the Leave vote and in abject horror. Some want us to exit the EU right away, others to somehow force a second referendum, or for me to vote against the trigger of Article 50 when it comes out. To be clear, I'm a Democrat. Parliament voted by a huge margin to hold this referendum, and in doing so gave the people the power to decide. I will respect the will of the British people, even if it was different from my personal preference, and I don't believe you keep asking the question until you get the answer you want. We are a peaceful, democratic nation, not an autocracy that ignores the electorate. If the result had been 52-48 in favour of Remain, I dare say there would be calls for the Leave camp and howls of protest from us Remainers for a rerun. And I wouldn't support that either. I said in this newspaper last week that it is as daft to suggest staying in as a golden goose for the British people, as it is saying, leaving will lead us to a land of milk and honey. Our economy is fundamentally strong, and our country can be just fine outside the EU, even if it is horribly uncertain right now how that will be. The will of the British people in the referendum is an instruction that must be delivered, and it's now up to this Parliament and this government to chart safe exit from the EU, ensure the New Deal is a wide public support, and to make it work for those we represent. Finally, David Cameron, in my opinion, the country lost twice last week. I have known the Prime Minister for 15 years and have worked closely with him. I know he will be missed when he departs in October. He took over a country on its knees and has turned it right round in 6 years. I know he will, as promised in Downing Street last Friday morning, steady the ship and ensure a peaceful handover of power to his successor. He will continue to have my friendship and support. Given these are fast-moving times, now more than ever, I will keep constituents updated on stevebryne.com. And there's a picture of a smiling stevebryne.com in the middle of the article.
And that, I think, I hope, is the end of things about the referendum. And here is just one thing from Belgarum this week. Quite different. Dean's bust is put on display. A sculpture of a former Dean of Winchester made it all the way to an international exhibition. The bronze bust sculpture of the Very Reverend Trevor Beeson was created by the Farley Chamberlain sculptor Melanie Legg to mark his 90th birthday. It won entry to a Society of Portrait Sculptors international exhibition held in London in May and will now be displayed in Romsey Abbey during the first 2 weeks of July. It will then go to the deanery at Peterborough, where Mr. Beeson's son-in-law, the Very Reverend Charles Taylor, who is a former vicar of St. Luke's Church in Stanmore, is dean of the cathedral there. Mr. Beeson, who was dean at Winchester Cathedral from 1986 to 1996, said, "It was a fascinating experience to be modelled by so gifted a sculpture, and an astonishing one to appear in an international exhibition." And there's a photograph of Mr. Beeson standing beside the bust of him, and the sculptor is beside that as well. And I must say, it's not a terribly good photo, but the bust does look exactly like him. She's done it very well. We come to what's on. Winchester Festival is on all next week, with a variety of speakers, including Sandy Toksvig, Vince Cable, Robert Hardy and Michael Morpurgo, and lots of concerts, including Neuer's Flood in Winchester Cathedral on July the 9th. If you want to find out if there are any tickets left for any of these, because of course it's been advertised for quite some time, ring the box office on 01962 857 276. That's 01962 857 276. Craftsmen from around the UK will visit Winchester Cathedral Inner Close for the first Stonemasons Festival on July the 8th and 9th. There will be a carving competition and also, I think, a possibility of trying it yourself. And the finished works of the competition will be on display on Sunday the 10th in the Inner Close, and admission is free. Robin Hood and His Merry Men are performing in the gardens of Wolvesey Palace from the 12th to the 16th of July, with a matinee on the 16th. Come with a chair and a picnic and enjoy their swashbuckling adventures. Tickets are available by going to the Chesil Theatre website or ringing 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. And on Friday the 15th of July, there's a talk in the new Learning Centre in the Cathedral Close entitled Downton Abbey in Perspective, Servant Life in Elite Households in the 17th and 18th Centuries. It starts at 7 p.m. and tickets are £5 from the Cathedral box office or reception in the Close. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 1st of July, at 4:55 a.m. and begins again at 9:23 p.m. On Wednesday the 6th of July, it ends at 4:59 a.m. and begins again at 9:21. The days are drawing in. Oh, can I reassure you that the magazine edition, which accompanies this posting, is for 2016 and not 2006, as apparently the announcer says. If you know anyone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we'll continue with other items of general news.
Yes, rare white rhino in new zoo home. There was a thud of hooves as Hampshire's newest arrival explored her new home. Pembe, a three-year-old white rhino, arrived at Marwell Zoo after a 146-mile journey from Colchester Zoo, where she was born. Marwell staff watched as the one-ton creature was gently lifted from the lorry into a new home in the Wild Explorers exhibit using a 40-foot crane. She's been getting used to her new surroundings over the next few days before she's introduced to Marwell's other rhinos, Sula, Kiri, and three-year-old male Jabari. Pembe and Jabari will become part of the European Endangered Species Breeding Programme, bringing even more arrivals to the zoo during the coming years, it's hoped. Ian Goodwin, Marwell's collection manager, said, "It's quite a big operation to move a rhino, as you can imagine, but it went really well, and just as we planned. Pembe was very calm and spent most of the time sitting down in the crate and enjoying some food. Once we arrived at Marwell, Pembe calmly walked out of the crate into her new home at Wild Explorers. She instantly enjoyed discovering the new smells of the other rhinos and exploring her new surroundings. There are fewer than 22,000 white rhinos left in the wilds of eastern and southern sub-Saharan Africa. The endangered creature is threatened by poachers who hunt them to sell their horns for traditional medicines and ornaments. And the poaching is being further fuelled by demand from the Far East, where rhino horn is an ingredient in Chinese medicine." And there's a lovely picture of Pembe having a good sniff around in her new enclosure, looking oddly at the same time very frightening and rather sweet.
Very rare Roman remains unearthed. An archaeological excavation involving scores of amateurs has uncovered a rare hexagonal Roman building in the heart of the Meon Valley. A recent archaeological dig near Meonstoke in the Meon Valley has revealed the foundations of a Roman building with a very rare hexagonal shape. The discovery was made by the amateur Meon Valley Archaeological and Heritage Group, led by University of Winchester archaeologist Dr. Nick Studley, using geophysical equipment on loan from historic England. "Only one other building like this has been discovered in Britain," said Tony King, Professor of Roman Archaeology at the University of Winchester and Director of the excavation. "It's a wonderful chance for the university's undergraduate students to excavate such a site. We are speculating whether we're seeing a pagan temple or some other type of building, and we have uncovered a Roman bathhouse very close by." Meonstoke villagers Alison Smalley and John Snow have been organising support from the other Meon Valley villages. Armed with trowels, Around 80 people of all ages took part in groups of 12 a day. "It's a wonderful experience," said one volunteer, "something I've always wanted to do. It's been on my bucket list for years." Back in 1986, Professor King was also involved in the excavation of a sizeable Roman building, the facade of which is now in the British Museum. "The new discovery is all part of the same complex," added Professor King. "We hope to come back next year and connect the two with further excavations." The Meon Valley Archaeology and Heritage Group is a spin-off from the Saxons in the Meon Valley project, inspired by Peter O'Sullivan, winner of the Mayor of Winchester's Community Award in 2014. The project's activities included work with schools on the Saxon elements in the Key Stage 2 syllabus, visits to museums, lectures to local historical societies, and the production of a stunning DVD about the valley, its landscape and architecture, much enhanced by unusual aerial shots with a drone camera. Project archaeologists have surveyed 18 sites so far with some significant results, contributing to a better understanding of what happened here when the Romans left in 410 AD and the Saxons took over. The project has shed new light on their cemeteries, settlement patterns and lifestyles. After the Roman period, and the then remote and wooded Meon Valley was settled by the incomers from Saxony in North Germany and Jutland in present-day Denmark. Christianity moved into the area, displacing pagan practices, and the Meon Stoke Church dates from the 13th century, but is thought to have replaced an Anglo-Saxon church. The valley was referred to in the 8th century by Bede as the province of the Meonwara, according to the Saxons in the Meon Valley website. The Meonwara, Meon people, were the Saxon and Jutish settlers who Bede described as living in the valley. And there are two pictures with this article. One is of the foundations of the hexagonal Roman building, which in the picture, actually, you can just make it out, but it really does look like a load of mud with a hedge next to
it.
But then there is a beautiful building of Meon Stoke Church, which was built in Saxon times, and the lovely Meon River.
Well, keeping with history, it's a 700-year-old gold ring find. It's been labelled as an important historical discovery. A 700-year-old gold ring found by a metal detectorist in Winchester has been presented to a collection by the Hampshire Cultural Trust. The metal detectorist submitted the find to the Portable Antiquities Scheme, PAS, run nationally by the British Museum in London. It was declared treasure by law and offered up for sale. The ring has one sapphire and two garnet settings. It's large at a little more than 20 millimetres in diameter. The Hampshire Cultural Trust, which cares for the museum collections of Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council, was able to purchase it with a substantial grant aid. This came from the Victoria and Albert Museum Purchase Grant Fund and the Headley Trust, matched by a contribution of £3,000 from Winchester City Council. In addition to its age, it's quite unusual to find an object of this type after all this time, explained Helen Rees, curator of the Winchester Archaeology at Hampshire Cultural Trust. Objects made of precious metal are often melted down and reworked, so they were much less likely to survive. How such a valuable object came to be sitting in the middle of a muddy field is a puzzle that we may eventually solve. The ring is now being prepared for display in Births, Battles and Beheadings, the Royal Blood Exhibition at Winchester Discovery Centre, which runs from November. After that, it will join the other archaeological treasures on the permanent display at Winchester City Museum. And there's a beautiful picture of this ring with a huge stone in the middle of it. and the little Garnets at the other side. Very lovely.
Owner recalls raid on store. A Winchester jewellery shop owner has told of the terrifying moment a gun was put to his head in an armed raid. John Quayle said he was determined to stay alive when two men rushed into Justice British Design Jewellery in Parchment Street. In less than 10 minutes, £250,000 worth of watches and jewellery were stolen from the shop in Winchester in April. The three men who orchestrated and carried out the raid are now facing lengthy prison sentences after pleading guilty at Winchester Crown Court to one count of armed robbery and another count of possessing an imitation firearm with intent to cause fear of violence. Mr. Quayle, aged 50, a father of two from Winchester, who has owned the shop for 16 years, told how quickly the raid on April the 15th happened. He said, "I was on my own, and I was opening up the shop when I was rushed by two guys, one of whom held a gun to my head. They demanded that I open the safe for them. I opened the safe and got the jewellery and watches out, and they loaded them into their bags and rushed out of the shop. I was determined not to die. I was calm when it happened. I just had to manage it. I was conscious that I didn't want them to get nervous and panic. I just wanted it to conclude." He added that the men fired the gun at one of the cabinets. Staff at Winchester Travel Service next door saw the men who wore crash helmets come out of a van parked outside and alerted police immediately. The robbers were quickly caught. The getaway vehicle, which was originally parked outside the store, was moved further down the road. And Mr. Quayle believes that this was due to him being spooked by the quick police response. Police arrested one man in Parchment Street and two others were apprehended after a tense standoff in a loading bay in St. George's Street. The store was closed for the rest of the day, but Mr. Quayle was determined to reopen the following morning. He said, "We were only closed for one day because part of it was I didn't want to be beaten by it. I didn't want to allow them to take my business from me in that sense, and I was determined to get open, even though lots of my stock was gone. It was obviously a scary moment, and these things affect you, but I'm trying to ensure it affects me as little as possible. I was pleased that I was on my own and nobody else was in the firing line. I think it was one of those circumstances where the community worked together to make sure that they were caught, and we've had lots of well-wishers calling by and asking after us. The police were phenomenal with the way they dealt with the incident in the first place, and the support they've given since has been greatly appreciated. Three men will be sentenced at Winchester Crown Court on July the 29th.
A writing superstar. She could be the next J.K. Rowling. Gracie Harding from Winchester has been crowned the National Young Writer of the Year. The 11-year-old Westgate School pupil has prevailed over more than 10,000 entries with her story, Happy Never After. Happy Never After tells the story of a princess who has waited decades for one of three brothers to come and wake her with a kiss, only to find she's already awake. And after her prince battles to rescue her, she has other ideas. Gracie said, "I never believed that I could win. It still seems unreal. I love to read and do so constantly. I hope to compete next year with high aims and an even better story." The competition is organised by tuition provider Explore Learning. And this year's theme was The Mashup, where children were challenged to write a 500-word story where two genres collide. And there is a photo of Gracie being presented with the cup and looking absolutely delighted.
12,000 have their say in a recycling review. Thousands of people have had their say on controversial plans to slash the number of tips across Hampshire. Almost 12,000 people took part in a public consultation by the County Council on the plans to review Hampshire's recycling facilities. Under the proposals, council waste chiefs plan to close up to 12 sites, cut opening hours, and reduce the number of days a week they're open. The proposal has angered some communities across the county. Last month, a 2,500-name petition was handed to the council calling for Marchwood Waste Centre to be open, to be spared the axe. The site is used by almost 200,000 people a year, and campaigners feared that closure could increase fly tipping. The consultation, which ran from March the 16th to May the 25th, was launched after the County Council said savings were needed due to cuts in government funding. According to the council, the proposals would affect 24 recycling centres in Hampshire, saving up to £1.55 million a year. The options being considered by the council are reducing the opening hours at all sites by 1 hour a day, closing all sites 1 day a week, closing all sites 2 days a week, reducing opening hours in the winter, reducing weekend opening, and closing between 4, 8 and 12 sites. The cutbacks are part of a £98 million package of savings that the county says it has to make by April next year. The final decision on the fate of the recycling centres will be made by Executive Member for Environment and Transport, Councillor Rob Humby, on July the 22nd. He said, "I'd like to thank everyone who took the time to respond. All the responses will be analysed alongside the other data and evidence we have for each individual site. We note that the HWRCs are well thought of and well used by people in Hampshire, and I think the number of responses we receive reinforces this point. The feedback we have had is extremely useful and will help us to shape the changes that will need to be made to establish a financially sustainable model for the whole of Hampshire for the future."
Now, here's an important reminder about phone scamming locally. Piece is headed Fraudster's Call. Residents in Hampshire have been targeted by telephone fraudsters trying to con them out of their money. According to Hampshire Police, there were 8 instances on a single day of people being targeted. On Wednesday, June the 22nd, 8 people in the county received a call from a person claiming to be from Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, HMRC. They were told they'd be arrested if they didn't settle an unpaid tax bill immediately. Each of the 8 victims realised this was a scam and refused to hand over any money. Now, police are warning about these calls and urging anyone who receives a suspicious phone call to refuse to hand over any money or bank details and report it to the police or Action Fraud immediately. Advice has been issued to help people protect themselves. Never give out any personal information about your bank account over the phone. If the caller asks you to ring them back so you can be sure of their identification, hang up and call the company they're claiming to be from a different phone. If you can't use a different phone, wait at least 5 minutes before calling back. If you have given out information which could compromise your bank account security, call your bank up and cancel your cards as soon as possible. Never hand over money to someone at the door to be sent off elsewhere. If someone comes to your door claiming to be from a company or organisation, ask for identification and make a note of their ID number. Ask them to wait while you verify their identity, close the door, find the number of the company they came to be from, and call them to verify their ID. Anyone who's concerned about similar incidents should contact the police by calling 101 or 999 if a crime is in progress.
The car's not quite ready. We've all made the odd driving mistake, but maybe none that looked as comically precarious with staff at Picador Winchester pictured trying to lift up a Vauxhall that was teetering on the brink of dropping over a wall. A photograph was taken by Nick Ashby, who was riding past on Eastern Lane and has had nearly 300 likes on Facebook page Winchester Pics. Mr. Ashby, a 51-year-old funeral assistant with Richard Steele and Partners, quickly got off his bike and took a picture on his phone last Wednesday. Mr. Ashby of Longfield Road, Winnell, told the Chronicle, "Well, I was on my motorbike and thought, that looks odd, and I took a photo. They were all trying to push it back off the wall, but they were never going to do it. It's not clear how the error happened, but Mr. Ashby believes the driver either misjudged the parking or selected the wrong gear. It was unclear how the vehicle was eventually hauled back onto the car park. The Chronicle tried to get an explanation from Picador Winchester, but no one replied to requests No one replied to their requests for comment. And there's a wonderful picture of a car hanging over the wall. The wall's quite low. The driver's sitting upright in it. And there are about five people trying to lift the car up and push it back over the wall.
Park and swipe with credit card. Winchester City Council is trialling a new method of paying for parking in two central car parks. A machine at Colebrook Street and at St Peter Street has been converted to accept credit debit cards, which also includes new contactless technology. The other change is that customers no longer have to pay up front for the time they think that they might be staying. On arrival, visitors will need to insert their credit or debit card into the machine and key in their registration number. At the end of their visit, they insert the same card into the machine and it will calculate the duration of the stay and charge accordingly. Councillor James Burns, portfolio holder for Transport and Professional Services, said, "It's now even easier for visitors to pay for their stay, plus customers will only be charged for the time they are parked. The new system still produces a pay and display ticket with a tear-off reminder portion. It will also record the time that the credit or debit card was inserted along with its associated vehicle registration number."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, John Regan.
Bye-bye.
Maria Head.
Bye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye. And do have a good week. Oh, and please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. Thank you.